Geek Freaks. I am Frank, and I'm here with Jonathan.
Hey, hey, yo.
And we got Tyler.
Hey, what's up, guys?
And we are the Capital Creative Showcase. We're going to be talking with a lot of video game developers today, checking out all the new games that are out here. These are local devs to the Sacramento area. It's a wonderful event. We also have Smash Brothers. We got those retro systems over there playing Super Nintendo, Super Mario Brothers and whatnot. It should be a really good event. What do you guys think about it so far?
Excited, yeah. It's going to be a lot of fun.
It's a great setup here. We like being out here and just kind of enjoying the time and meeting all these new developers and seeing all these new games coming across.
Yeah. There has been some really big highlights. Azure Games, I believe they're new this year. You guys got to check out their game. It is one of those games you know is going to be selling well on Steam. I look forward to take a look at it, and hopefully we can chat with them later on.
I'm looking forward just to see all the games.
Yeah.
I mean, everything here is so unique and so different. I mean, it's just cool to see, like, more and more people here as we, you know, as this scene gets bigger.
Yeah. What do you think, Jonathan? Any highlights so far?
I haven't really had a chance to go around and check out any of the games, though. I know last year that was a lot of fun to see the unique games that people are making. So I look forward to us being able to take a break at some point.
In our defense, we've been setting up for 2 hours, and we're a little pooped.
It's also cool, though, that they're going to do, like, a People's Choice Award.
Yeah.
So there's, like, an area that you can scan, like, the QR
That's
code,
big.
And like, people can vote for their favorite game, and then they get an award at the end. They also have it where the developers of the games vote for the game that they like the most, and they have a Developer's Choice Award. So I think that's a cool twist that they've added.
It really is, and we're going to submit our votes. We're going to talk about them before we do it, though, and give our reasons and stuff like that, kind of explain what our votes are for.
Mm-hmm.
But I do want to clarify, all the games are dope. So we're not picking favorites, but we're literally picking favorites.
I'm picking favorites.
I mean, I love these conventions. This is one of our favorites. It may be a smaller one, but the fandom is so dedicated.
Mm-hmm.
But they wear me out.
Yeah.
They definitely do. I remember last year Kyle came out. We had a lot of people out last year. It was frankly a little bit too many people, if we're being honest. We were all bumping heads back here. All of us trying to shuffle back and forth. But anyways, we had Kyle come out. And then we're like, oh, afterwards we'll go to the bars, we'll hang out all day, it'll be great. Me and him both, thank God he was on board with it. We were just like, let's go watch the Kings game at my house.
Let's get back with some beers and like doze off on the couch.
That was perfect.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Okay, so we have a lot to do today. We have a lot of interviews, a lot of checking out things. We'll discuss a lot more going on. We even have a regular Geek Freaks episode planned. We're going to go over the news and talk about a lot of things that are coming up and review some stuff. So we'll see you guys soon, and thanks for hanging with us.
Welcome back, everybody. Geek Freaks Network. We're here at the Capital City Showcase. I'm Tyler from Who's Got Next Game. I got some great people we're doing interviews with today. Go ahead and introduce yourself, guys. Come say hi to the community. Let us know what you're all about.
Absolutely. Hi, Morris Jackson, one of the owners of Valhalla Esports, and I have my partner, Elizabeth, who's also a partner within esports as well.
So you guys are an esports training facility, which is so cool to hear that esports has revolutionized and come up to the point where we can now have this stuff for communities of all different ages. So I kind of want to talk about like what your guys' goal is and where you guys are at in regards to, you know, what you're doing. So.
So our location, our company is called Valhalla Esports Training. We focus on training kids from the age of 6 to 17. And to your point, we're really looking to find a way to introduce the youth into this world of esports. I know before when gamers got into esports, it was always a battle and a journey for them to get to that professional level, getting people to understand the values, the premises, why it's such a passion of theirs. We're really looking to close that gap, looking to use legacy players to help our kids and youth understand the value of esports, but then also showing the kids how to learn from their past experiences to help accelerate their growth in their competition play. But everything we do is fully curated by our community. We make certain that our kids are not only introduced to the games of their choice, but we also help them provide assessments. We help give them coaching, we help place them on teams, and we also have our own self-curated league to help them graduate naturally into the levels of competitive play.
And there's a variety of games, too, that you guys utilize. It's not just, like, one set style of game. You guys are open and diverse with a bunch of different stuff. So, I mean, you've gone over the list of stuff, and I know that you guys are continuously adding stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's so cool to have, and I know that you guys have multiple locations as well.
That's correct, yeah. So right now we have three locations. We have one in Folsom, we have one in Las Vegas, and our third one's in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
We compete on Overwatch, League of Legends, Fortnite, Apex, Minecraft, and then Rocket League.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're also always introducing new games.
Like
just in the next month, We're going to be launching our game in Siege, so we'll be training on Siege as well.
Yeah.
But then was talking to you about even Tetris.
Yeah.
And bringing that into the fold.
Yeah, we're wanting to mix in a couple of different things, and we've talked a little bit about, you know, like wanting to bring in different styles of games, because you've talked about the team aspects of games, but then we also talked a little bit before we started the recording was more of kind of the single player aspect of the games and kind of working through those. So it's interesting to see that you guys are taking this dynamic and just running with it and getting youth involved and that kind of stuff. And I love that about your guys' stuff. So what inspired the whole thing?
Like
where did it start at?
Well, for us, it started with the fact that as we were watching esports and we were seeing that esports is now being offered as a college scholarships to multiple schools. We also saw that the competitive landscape was growing across the world. I mean, they just announced the first esports World Cup in Saudi Arabia.
Mm-hmm.
And then we started to look at, okay, where do people go grow and learn? Obviously, you have LAN centers where guys can, you know, guys and girls can go learn and play. But then we started thinking about where does a youth go? Where does a youth go to be introduced and learn how to grow and train in this? I mean, baseball has Little League, football has Pop Warner, but esports professionals had really nothing before this.
Right.
So we said, okay, why not build a bridge and fill that gap?
Yeah.
And now have a place where kids can come in, again, learn from professionals, learn the artistry of esports, learn how to compete the right way in these games, but learn in community instead of learning in isolation. Mm-hmm. And then we've also saw, in other countries, that esports internet or these internet cafes that are in some other countries. A lot of those people who are in those internet cafes, that's where their teams were formed, that's where their teams graduated, and that's where these teams are competing on these world stage. But then if you look at the States, we didn't see a lot of that happening here. Yeah. So that's where we felt it was critical for us to build that bridge and say, okay, where do we bring the youth in to come together to build this level of experience and to do it in community and to do it with socializing and doing it while learning some of the traditional landscapes of modern day sports, like communication, social skills, coaching, mentorship, all the things that we got from traditional sports too.
Yeah. No, that's so cool to think about too, because we even talked about how like in regular sport there's all this stuff like you were saying, but in the esports world it's such a niche thing as well, because you know a lot of people, it's not even just like they don't know, they're just hesitant because they're not sure. And it's good that there's this bridge in between so that they can understand more of like, oh man, like I can get into this game. This game has a competitive scene. Like there are games out there. Like even when we talked about Tetris, you're like, there's a classic Tetris scene.
Yeah.
You know? Yes. So it's cool to be able to have that for somebody and be able to talk about, hey, yeah, there is a competitive scene for a game that you like. But hey, I appreciate you taking the time, man. Let them know where they can, you know, find you guys on social media or anything like that.
Yeah.
Let them know.
Yeah. So our locations, again, we have three across the United States. We have one in Vegas, one here in Folsom. The third one's in Cornelius, North Carolina. The one here in Folsom's on 187 Blue Ravine Road in Folsom. They can find us on Instagram at 704 Valhallen, or our Vegas location at 702 Valhallen, or our Cornelius location at 916 Valhallen.
Okay, awesome. Hey, I appreciate you taking the time, man. Yeah. I wish you the best of luck. I think we're going to be working together pretty soon,
though.
So yeah. I definitely want to. So.
Yeah, need that Tetris League.
Yeah, check them out, guys. Valhallen Esports, man. They got big things going on.
All right, everybody, we're here with another game developer. How you doing? How you enjoying the event?
I am really enjoying it. Thank you for having me. This is super fun.
Go ahead and introduce yourself. I cut you off when you're doing that.
Hi, I'm Ricardo Andres, my alias, the Comic Master. I'm an indie game dev and author.
What game did you bring today?
I brought Darkstorm. So Darkstorm is a third-person shooter, and kind of the premise is you are a robot named Mars, and you have to go and exterminate alien insects in this fictional city called Razor City. So the game takes lots of inspiration from Dune and Titanfall. And yeah, it's the first of many games, hopefully.
What kind of story, and did you get the story from the novel or anything like that? I know you're also a novel writer. Did you pull that story from there?
That's correct. So I'm a science fiction novelist. My novel, Luminary Quantum Rising, is actually different from Darkstorm. So Darkstorm was kind of a story that I kind of had in the back of my head, and I wanted to do something different. As a science fiction writer, you know, you love the genre, but I thought it'd be fun to kind of explore a different venue and maybe look at how robots and aliens mash up together.
Yes. Is there any sort of, a lot of times when we go into sci-fi, there's a current day morality that we're trying to explain. Is there anything like that going on in your game?
Yeah, so actually one thing that I've been really interested to implement in my game is AI. Okay. I know AI is really prevalent in today's society, and I thought it would be interesting to have a killer robot with artificial intelligence trained to fight aliens.
Yes.
And to abstract humanity, because I know humanity shows up in science fiction all the time.
Of course, so. Of course. Now, is this going to be set in the distant future or in a different place?
I currently have it set in 2040. That is a random number I chose off the top of my head.
Yeah.
But I think kind of having a future that is close to ours kind of resonates with a lot of the players compared to something 2130, for example.
Right, right. Especially with the use of AI. AI is currently on the rise, so when you start to introduce it in the game, of course, people start to feel the impact a little bit more. In your story, how has AI developed over time? Have we lost control of it? Is it protecting us?
So I've always been one for AI, and I thought it would be interesting to have artificial intelligence work alongside humanity.
Yeah.
Partly because in Darkstorm, you're fighting aliens. It's an alien invasion, and AI is something created by humans.
Right.
So if humanity can utilize their tools to fight back against aliens, I feel like that also really resonates with the player. They feel like they have that fighting system. Also, I wanted to steer away from tropes. So.
Yeah. Hard to do because, of course, with it, we have like games like Helldivers and stuff like that, so many alien games. What kind of tropes were you trying to avoid, and what did you do that was unique?
In this subject, I think the biggest trope we could talk about is how AI turns against humanity.
Yeah.
I think that's seen time and time again for things like Terminator and all these other works that are becoming more prevalent nowadays.
Yeah.
So that was definitely one trope. Another trope that I wanted to steer away from was, like I mentioned, you know, making sure there's no humans in the game.
Yeah.
I think a lot of us as players are really used to playing some sort of biped figure. So to play something that is, you know, walkable, you know, you have this walking mech, but it's a robot, it kind of reminds a lot of players, at least players who've played it today, reminds them of like Armored Core 6, for example, games that they aren't really familiar with, that haven't really seen. So
That's great. Speaking of development, how long have you been developing this game?
I have been developing it for 7 months. So I'm currently a college student studying computer science.
That's incredible. I've seen how good this game looks. For 7 months, that is insane.
Thank you. There were a lot of restless nights.
Yeah.
mixing Calculus 2 and video game development has definitely been a struggle, but I'm just glad to be here.
Yeah. What kind of programming language are you using for this?
I'm using Unity. So I started programming when I was 13.
Oh,
and
wow.
When I started programming, I actually dove right into Unity. And I thought it'd be really interesting to use an interface that a lot of pro developers are using, but still really push myself in the deep end. Mm-hmm. So during the pandemic, I spent a lot of time learning Unity, and then finally, once I developed Darkstorm, it just felt like second nature to me.
Is there some benefits to Unity that you see are better than, say, Unreal Engine or any of the other engines out there?
I would say the best positive to Unity would be the community. I think the community has really sold me on Unity because as I'm, you know, programming Darkstorm, I run into problems. And you just go online and say, hey, I need to fix my rigid body, my character controller, whatever it might be. And there's tons of forums made by Unity developers, unlike something like Unreal Engine, which is more closed off, if you will.
Interesting. That's good. Speaking of community, have you gotten a small community starting to build for your game as excitement builds?
I have. You know, it's really hard to be in this industry, especially as an indie game developer, indie author. You can't expect instant feedback. So when I checked my Steam reviews, I was really happy to see that people were playing it.
Oh, good.
Especially because, you know, like I mentioned, working full-time and college student, you know, you publish the game and then you kind of like, it's in the back of your head because you're going day to day. So to see people playing it and talking about it, even on my social media, has really just made me feel like I've made some sort of impact.
Have you gotten any feedback from this marketing, the social media presence that has changed how you're developing the game?
I have. And I think one of the biggest feedbacks is actually making it free. You know, I mentioned a lot of people, especially my best friend, I told him, I'm like, hey, I want to make my game, you know, $20. And I decided $20 just because, you know, lots of games I played were $20.
Right. Yeah.
It seemed logical. But what he told me is, like, you need to make it free. You need to make it free, not in the sense where people aren't paying money, but free in the sense where they can download it and try it and tell you what they think. Mm-hmm. And that just opened my world. Unfortunately, I can't make my novel free because, well, you know, you pour 5 years into it. And,
yeah.
But I really thought that making it free meant a lot to me.
What is the gameplay like in your game? Are we first-person shooter? Kind of explain that.
So Darkstorm is currently a third-person shooter.
Okay.
Now, I've heard lots of people say that they wanted first-person, whatever it is, and I didn't realize that, you know, some people were just in love with the perspective.
It's so divided, yeah.
I had no idea. So I chose third-person primarily because I like seeing the model. I like seeing the character. To give some perspective, I played Battlefront when I was a kid.
Classic.
And I love seeing the Stormtrooper, the Jedi Master, whatever it is. So to see Mars, your robot, walking around the environment really meant a lot to me.
Yeah.
So Darkstorm, third person, you're walking around this map. And this map is Razor City. So it's completely decimated by an alien invasion. And your task is to go and find these aliens and vanquish them.
Yeah.
Originally, the working title for the project was Search and Destroy. And, you know, the same friend I mentioned told me that's a, you know, that's a Call of Duty game mode. You can't just take that name.
Yeah.
But I liked the concept, search and destroy. You can have a robot search enemies and destroy them. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the concept of the game. And I was really inspired by Doom. I really liked how simple Doom was and how playable it was, where you're thrown into this sci-fi map. And you have to go and find your enemies and pick up collectibles. I think that really forces the player to go and explore your map, go finding different areas of the map that you spent a long time developing, and see if you could pick up collectibles to make your character stronger.
So, okay, so it has some RPG elements where we're making our character stronger. You speak about the map. Is this an open world game?
Yes and no. I would say open world in the sense where it is a giant map, but no in the sense where there are barriers. You are not welcome in certain areas, and the map will tell you so. And I think it's great being here, hearing the feedback people say, because I know, you know, you'd consider games like GTA 5 that is completely open world.
Right.
It's practically like a digital Los Angeles. And thinking about that, can I make, you know, an open world in this Darkstorm? There's a lot of things you have to consider. So I would say that I should try to steer away from that.
Now, how do you decide the limits of your city or your environment when you're trying to do an open world game like that or a bigger map like that?
I think the biggest thing is the storytelling. So if we consider the summary of Darkstorm, you know, decimated city, alien invasion, killer robot, what are some locations in Razor City, the fictional environment, that the player can go explore? Mm-hmm. One of them I thought instantly was military compound. You know, there should be at least three military compounds that show a ton of dead skeletons, soldier skeletons with guns, and army trucks destroyed, tanks with fire. Another thing was a shack community. And I will say the shack community came from limitations. Okay. You know, keeping a low budget on the video game, I found shack models, like literally kind of like homeless people could have lived here. So that suggested maybe, you know, there was an alien invasion. Humanity tried living in the city and then decided they could not. Another thing I decided was a shipping container section, kind of like in Call of Duty, how I know in the World War II video game they had a shipping container area.
Yeah.
And the reason I decided this is because it's like a labyrinth. So you have to navigate around the shipping containers, and it's a little eerie. So that's how I chose the different sections of the game.
Now, do you have to worry about how far a person walks before they run into the next interesting item? Maybe a collectible, a part of the game, something like that? Or is it just like you want to make it feel vast?
A little bit of both. Okay. So one thing that I really wanted to include in the game is if there's collectibles, I need the player to access them.
Yeah.
The other thing, too, is I didn't want the player feeling inclined to walk off the map. So one thing you'll notice when you play Darkstorm is it feels like there's sand dunes blocking you inside a section of the city.
Mm-hmm.
And playing the game, exploring the map, it didn't feel limiting in the sense that I had thought it would. But because there's so many collectibles spawned throughout the map, it really forces you to, you know, quicken up your pace and go and collect these little items. So,
and that's the primary game play loop, is the collecting the items and stuff like that. But it sounds like there's still a good deal of exploring, and sometimes games forget about that. That's good to hear that you've got that in hand.
Absolutely, I completely agree.
So before we head out, where can people find the game? And I want to make sure to shout out the novel, too.
So Darkstorm is available on Steam. You just search Darkstorm. Mm-hmm. I believe I'm listed under the Comic Master. Mm-hmm. And feel free to download it. There's no wait list, no anything on there, so you can go and download the game. As for my novel, Luminary Quantum Rising, this is a novel I've written for a while. And that is published through Amazon or Barnes & Noble. And if you follow me on my socials, I have author events all over the Sacramento Bay Area. So you can go and find me, and I'd love to sign novels. So.
Awesome. That's cool. Thank you very much for hanging out with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. Tyler here, he's got the Who's Got Next Game. You see how it was just up there, the Who's Got Next Game podcast on our display. Tyler, we haven't heard from you a little bit on Geek Freaks. Explain how Who's Got Next Game's going.
It's just three dudes from college just talking about, you know, back in the day playing video games on the couch and just debating and talking about different genres. And the big thing right now is we just went past March Madness for basketball, but I decided to turn it into a video game bracket. So we got a bunch of different games that we have our, you know, criteria is like, oh, what's the best, you know, game to play on the couch with your buddies? So we have each of the consoles. So we have Wii, PlayStation 2, you know, a bunch of different consoles that we're going to go over. And then we're going to do a grand bracket where each of the number one games that make it through the bracket are going to go into a bracket and fight it out to determine, in our opinion, what's the best game to play with your buddies on the couch.
Now, you guys just finished the Wii bracket, correct?
We did Wii bracket, and I believe
the PlayStation bracket was
PlayStation
before
bracket.
Now, I've got some major beef with you, because Crash Bandicoot lost on that thing. If you're thinking PlayStation 1, it's one of the pinnacle games. How did that lose out?
So the criteria is not best game. You know what I mean? Because people made that argument. It's like, oh, hey, it's the best game. Okay, well, we're not talking about the best game. We're talking about the best game to play on the couch with your buddies.
Yeah.
Because I agree that it's the best game. I don't agree that, like, because I made the argument of pass and play can be something
you did, you're defending it. Connor was knocking you down hard.
And it's hard because with a solo play game like that, you know, what are you supposed to do to argue playing on the game with your, you know, on the couch with your friends? You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's a hard argument. You can change the debate so many times and have different nominations just by putting in little criteria like that.
Yeah. And you see with, like, all the other brackets that we have, I mean, the most unique one, I'll give a little preview, our GameCube bracket, there's no Mario Party because we decided to do like one game per like criteria. So like we have Mario Party 8 in our Wii bracket.
Yeah.
So we didn't want to do, okay, Mario Party 8 versus Mario Party 6 in the grand final. Well, okay, it's two Mario Party games. You know, at that point you're just debating mini games versus, you know, having a collective retrospect of different games that aren't, you know, like Pokemon Fire Red versus Leaf Green. Well, okay, they're the same game, just different, you know,
a few
Pokemon.
Small changes.
Yeah.
Mario Party might be the best couch co-op game in general. I mean, I'm trying to think of something that's so
Mario Kart
geared for couch co-op.
Mario Kart.
Yeah, Mario Kart's good, but like the party aspect of Mario Party, I think it's inviting these segmented things. People can go up to go for bathroom breaks. I guess Kart has that feature as well. Jonathan, can you think of a better kind of game that's designed for couch co-op?
I don't know. Not off the top of my head.
Mario Brothers 3.
If I had a list of games to go through.
I'm telling you, Mario Brothers 3 or Mario Brothers 2 or the original Mario Brothers, it's, I would say, at least in the two-player perspective.
Yeah. Well,
because we had that as another debate. It's like, okay, so what is two players, four players, you know, how many players can play?
Because
you have, like, the Wii that can, you know, you can go on LAN and do eight players.
Yeah.
You know, and retro consoles don't have that, you know.
Yeah.
I got to say, though, for the Mario Brothers, the reason that one's a tough one, and I mean, David used to mess with Miguel on this, is you have to wait until that person's dead to play the second player. So if you're playing with somebody who's actually, like, skilled at the game, well, then you're screwed.
Yeah.
And you're sitting there, and you're just kind of, like,
watching somebody else play.
Yeah, you're, like, trying to, like, throw popcorn in their face.
No, that's when you smack the controller out of
Yeah, you're like, Mom, he's taking too long. You throw that out there.
Yeah.
So what we did for Miguel is we would give him a dummy controller that he would just play on and go crazy for. Has good old days.
That's funny.
Okay, so yeah, Smash Brothers is also, we have Smash Brothers here today. That's a great couch co-op game.
Agreed.
Yeah.
And it's a game that I've been playing since I can remember.
Mm-hmm.
Like, one of the first consoles that I bought on my own was a GameCube. So I've been playing Smash Brothers since I was able to
play
purchase
games.
A console. Yeah. And that
That's
was back in what, like 2001?
Oh, God, I'm so old. Yeah,
you're old.
Yeah, you are.
We're
old,
all getting old.
Every time I hear these dates, and I'm just like, oh, yeah, that's like 25 years ago.
The Wii is old enough to go to war.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Jeez.
I remember working at Toys R Us, and the Wiis were like the hottest item in the store.
You couldn't find them.
I know.
It was like 2006.
Nintendo sends the shipments out every Wednesday, so Wednesday morning, I had a bunch of parents lining up outside of Toys R Us, and eventually I came up with a ticketing system so I can give them tickets so they can go back in their cars and warm up, because it was in the middle of freaking winter, they're trying to buy Christmas gifts. And it was nuts. It was mayhem, right? So we had them all go through. It took about 6 months for the Wii to be regularly available. And I'm like, oh, okay, we're past that phase, right? And then those bastards at Nintendo came out with a thing called Wii Fit.
Yeah.
You remember Wii Fit?
Oh, yeah.
I have it.
You have
I
Wii
have
Fit?
I have the board, too.
Yeah. That was such a craze. Yeah. And then again, the line showed up.
Oh,
that was tickets again.
Genius move on Nintendo's part.
That's good move.
It you just know they, sold so much. You know so that much. They had they came out with a sequel?
What?
Yeah,
what
Wii Fit Plus. Like it's basically a sequel with just more features.
Yeah. Know? Yeah. I can't imagine how many consoles that sold. Families buying it thinking, oh, this is going to be a...
100 million.
Our kid... Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like 100 million.
Our kid likes to play video games.
Not as much as the PlayStation 2, but still. Yeah. It's more than enough.
That's a lot. That's enough. Off of a simple game that people... It was a fad. People played it for a little while and realized, okay, well,
yeah.
I'd rather go outside and play soccer. I want my kid to have
real
activity.
Let's talk about the game that was included with the Wii when you bought it, Wii Sports.
Yeah. Yeah, that was pretty
cool. Talk about a staple of Nintendo.
Yeah. It sold 100 million copies.
Did they ever expect that to happen,
too? And that's not including the ones that are on the... Like, actually sold.
Yeah.
Do you think they actually expected that? They actually thought, like, oh, you know what? We're going to do really well with this game. Like, I thought it was just a dummy demo.
I think they knew they had a gem, and, you know, they went in one of two... You go in one of two directions with it. Okay, you sell it, or pair it with the console to sell more consoles.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think it was a smart move for them to pair it with the console.
In the design of the Wii, that was the whole thing, is the motion, you know, functionality with the controls and stuff. So they had to have something like that that was engaging to get to sell people on this new control, you know, feature that it had.
Well, then it developed into Wii Sports Resort.
Yeah.
That's right. They did do that.
Yeah, and those are two games for the Wii that I'm like, man, I can play those all day. Like... And never get sick or bored of them.
When you think about it, it's like a kind of augmented reality thing that they had way ahead of everybody else, where it's, you know, you're actually physically interacting with the digital world.
Well, and they made attempts with like other retro consoles, but the technology just wasn't there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And even for Wii, it was very early compared to what we have now for, you know, augmented reality and virtual reality.
Well, it predates that, and again, it was Nintendo pushing the board on this. There was a thing where you put a pad down. It was like a Dance Dance Revolution pad, and I actually owned one. I won in a poker game, it had a up, down, left, right, like a controller, A and B on it, but you had to dance it out the entire time.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember yours.
Yeah. And so, that was such an innovation. I mean, no other company was even thinking about that. They were trying to get better graphics at the time.
It's just buttons between two layers of plastic with a print on top, but it's smart.
But you pitch it as exercise. It actually came with an Olympics game.
Yeah.
And then another thing that pushed the boundaries, you might have actually used one of these. I know I did. The Virtual Boy. That was most harsh red light in your eyes possible. And I had a tank game. I remember playing a tank game with it. But you look through it, and it was quote-unquote VR, but it was like three layers of red lights that you look through and kind of like pointed in a certain direction. But, I mean, give it up to Nintendo. They pushed it, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Virtual Boy collapsed, but the Wii was one of the biggest successes ever.
Yeah, it's one way or the other with Nintendo. Yeah. I've never had a Nintendo console that's like in the middle.
Yeah.
Handheld wise, I mean, the DS was a craze.
And when the DS came out, I thought, why do we need two screens? Just give me one bigger screen.
Yeah.
And I thought it was stupid. And now, I mean, the DS makes some of the best games that I can remember.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's actually in our bracket as well. We have some like handheld.
Good.
So we have Game Boy.
Handheld,
I
was real loyal to. Yeah.
So
looking at Nintendo, furthering this adventure, we got Switch 2, presumably announced next year. It's all but guaranteed. What are some of the features you expect to see on that? Again, thinking Nintendo's going to push the limits.
I think that they're just going to go for more of like upgrading the graphical aspect. I think that's what they're going to attempt.
4K, yeah.
And then I feel like they have something in their back pocket that they're just going to sneak in and be like, oh yeah, here's, you know, AR goggles for you. You know what I mean? Something that's going to push forward.
If they could incorporate some sort of VR, I think that's a huge selling point.
Because they have like the box one, but that's not really VR.
That's a joke. That's a joke for, yeah.
It's like a half-assed version of VR.
Yeah. So. Jonathan, is there any kind of features you could imagine that Nintendo would put into the Switch 2?
I mean, just more social connection, trying to, you know, be able to play as a family, cross platforms and stuff like that.
But. Yeah.
It's hard to say. I mean, they already push the limits with everything they do. So, I imagine them trying to make a new version of the Wii, and using, now that we have augmented reality is much more well established. You know, the Wii gloves and stuff like that. So you have all the controls, the tactile motion and stuff. Yeah. I could see them evolving that, but I don't know. drinking.
I'm going to throw out, what if, you know, we had the DS, we're talking about DS and has that two screens. What if they do the same thing, but now we have that flexible screen?
Oh, yeah.
What if it opens up and it's one long screen that can be divided into two or something's old, you know?
Well, because then that gives you the opportunity for, like, you know how they're doing the classic consoles on it? So that gives them a chance to do DS as one of those for a selling feature.
That's a good point.
I could see that.
And that screen, when I first came out, I thought that's the stupidest thing when I was on phones, because I'm like, that thing's going to crack. It's going to be bad. And the early ones were not great. Mm-hmm. But now we've got a friend, D, she has one and swears by it.
Yeah, one of my bosses has one. He uses it every day. And he does emails and stuff on his phone. He's constantly using it.
Really?
He's never had any issue with the screen in the middle.
Doesn't that seem insane? We're in the future.
It does. Yeah, we definitely are. Yeah. It's just odd leap in technology. You never thought that was going to be something people would want, let alone develop.
Right.
A screen that folds in half. But then you can start to think of so many applications. You can put it on all kinds of round surfaces.
It's the modern flip phone.
Yeah.
It is the modern flip phone, actually. Yeah, they could add Snake on it. I'm sold.
You wrap a car with that, put cameras around
let's
it.
Let's add Snake to it.
Speaking of Nintendo and mobile gaming, ROMs are now allowed on the iPhone. Have you guys set that up yet?
I have Delta.
I just downloaded it. This is my favorite TikTok poster. I don't know.
Boy, I tell you, I got in a lot of trouble over that.
Oh, really?
The TikTok is still up. It's okay. Well, I may have shown how to steal games on there.
I saw one of the comments where someone was saying, don't actually show the download part. Like,
I may have broken some rules. So TikTok, you know, they're shady, so it's fine. I'm shady with them. It's cool. But you know who's not? YouTube.
Yeah.
They are pissed.
Oh, yeah.
I got a strike. I did it before this, actually. I had to take a little class to try to remove that strike. Mm-hmm. And so I took a little class explaining, like, it was really like a driving class.
Yeah.
But it was like,
Driver's Ed.
I took Driver's Ed for YouTube. Yeah, I did it this morning. And so in July, I get that strike removed from the account. I can only get three and then you're out. But and I was like, for real, guys? I've posted all kinds of crap on there whatever. I guess you can't technically show it.
Delta's thing is really cool because it's so clean. Much that's on there.
What have you played on there so far?
So far, I've done Tetris.
Of course, he's done Tetris.
That's the only thing
that
I downloaded.
That was the first one I started with.
Did you really? Yeah. Oh,
and
man.
Then I did, on the SNES one, I did Kirby's Dream Course.
I love Kirby. I love everything Kirby.
So Kirby's Dream Course is just the
golf
game.
It's a racing.
Yeah. No, it's a golf game.
Oh, I thought Dream Course. Dream Course.
And so I tried that, and it was super fun to do it that way. I actually set it up so I have it on my iPad, and then I use a Bluetooth controller with it.
Yeah.
So it's basically like a mini console, so I can take it wherever I want to.
That's cool.
Which is really
nice.
That
is dope.
And it's pretty compatible with a lot of different Bluetooth controllers.
Yeah, you're able to play with N64, Xbox, or the PlayStation 5 controllers can hook to your phone. Mm-hmm. So you can do that. I even have a mount that goes on the PS5 and the Xbox controllers that I hold my phone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And now you can play any Nintendo game, and you know there's going to be ones for PlayStation whatever. It runs N64 games. It runs GameCube games. Mm-hmm. I have Diddy Kong, of course. Frank's going to grab that.
Yep.
But I also have, I was playing Pokemon Fire Red on there. Mm-hmm. Like a dream. Yeah. Better than the graphics, of course, the system released on.
Have you seen the video of people now? They actually stream their screen to their big screen TV.
Oh, really?
And then they use the phone
as
a
controller. That makes so much sense.
So there's people with like 80-inch TVs playing Pokemon Emerald.
Oh, my God. Geez. The future is now, guys.
Yeah. I know what Frank's doing when he gets home.
I mean, like, I'm trying to, like, we have until 5 today.
Yeah. I'm definitely just going to sleep, but maybe tomorrow.
Tomorrow, yeah. After today, I'm sleeping. After this, yeah. Hey, everybody. We're here now with Kevin from Cobalt Tactics. How are you doing today?
I'm good.
That's good.
How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Now, you're showcasing your game here at the Capital Creative Showcase. Can you explain a little bit of what your game is like?
Yeah, sure. So, Cobalt Tactics, it is a fantasy-themed tactical roguelite. So, it's about mostly planning and strategy is a large part of the game.
Mm-hmm.
It's about getting together like a large band of different like party members that you can equip with different kinds of weapons and items. You can like custom equip. Do you want these guys to have bows? Do you want them a sword? If you look for like casters specifically, you can give them like they get spells that you can equip for skills and stuff. So it's kind of about building your own strategy. You know, do you want to get a bunch of meat shields and just throw them at it? Do you want to and focus on a bit of healing? Do you want to get like a whole bunch of backliners and just get high movement characters so you just never get hit? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of different strategies, elements to it that you can go with. It's a little bit similar to games kind of like Fire Emblem, I would say. Well, yeah, a little bit. in the tactical, like, large party of different guys. But a little bit, right? I guess stuff like that, or... Yeah, stuff like that. Or XCOM. XCOM's a really good example.
Okay.
And those games where you, like, have different units, it's kind of important to keep them alive, for instance. There's a whole system where every time that someone lives, they'll level up, and mm-hmm. you can recruit them again. So... Not only are you not as much at the whim of RNG, which the roguelike element helps with, but it also allows you to like get more powerful over time with it.
Yeah.
But they also scale in cost, so you don't necessarily have to like commit to it fully, because you know if you do, the high cost means you're spending most of your resources on maintaining these guys, versus maybe if the guys you're working on don't have the highest stats, you might go, it's not really worth the cost to keep putting into them.
Yeah.
And you might decide, maybe I can roll for something better. And each run's unique. We're going to have challenges that you can do, kind of like the way that Hades mm-hmm. does their challenge systems, where you can like put on different difficulty modifiers to make the game harder. A good example is your main guy, your hero, the one guy you start with who's your always mate, your mainstay. There's one of the challenges is if he dies... you instantly lose the run. It's just over.
Oh, wow.
It resets.
Yeah.
And you get extra meta currency, these glory points you can use for all kinds of cool stuff. You can unlock new types of units that'll show up in the random generation.
Mm-hmm.
You can unlock new item slots so that it becomes easier because you'll get more unlocks available each run. It's a lot of cool stuff like that. Some of it's cosmetics. You can, if you get like X number of kills of a certain type of enemy, you can like or some number of deaths or kills, you can get like a skin for one of your current guys, so it looks really cool. There's cool stuff like that we've been playing. But
it sounds like you put a lot into this game. How long have you been developing it?
Yeah, well, we've been developing. It's not me alone. I want to clarify. There's a lot. Well, it's a team of like 5 or 6 of us. They're like mm-hmm. mainstays at the moment. But we've been developing it for a good couple years now.
Oh yeah,
actually.
How many more years do you think you got in you?
As many as it takes. We're very committed.
That's such an open-ended question, isn't it?
It's as many as it takes, really. Because, like, this isn't a project that, like, we're like, doing as, like, a sponsorship or something. Mm-hmm. This is... It's we're pulling it by the bootstraps right now, you know?
Yeah.
And it's... We're doing it in our free time. We've all got, like, our own lives going on. Some of us are in college or just graduating from college. Some of us have like full-time careers mm-hmm. in like other fields, and we're just devoting the rest of our time to this project because honestly we really wanted to.
Yeah.
And it came out of a long form 9-month long game jam mm-hmm. event here with Sacramento Developers Collective.
Yeah.
So it came out of that sort of game jam spirit, and it's kind of just evolved into this fully fleshing out project that we've just committed ourselves to keep going with, because we got to the end of 9 months and we went, you know, why do we need to stop here? We want to keep going. This is a cool project.
Yeah. And you know? So you guys just kept pushing the community forward. Did you guys actually meet there at the game jam?
Yeah. Yeah,
that's
we
so
did.
Cool.
Yeah, so we met up in person for the first meeting for talking about it. It wasn't just us. It was a bunch of people, because they had like pitching, and everyone made different ideas. And then the most popular ideas got voted on, and the teams kind of got, like, formed around that. Mm-hmm. So that was how we found our team. And the person who pitched it, Daniel Todd, he's the lead project manager, and he's also the artist for us. And he does phenomenal pixel art for this game. Yeah. It's the reason why it looks the way
it's gorgeous. I was already looking. I'll include links to everything, guys, so you guys could go around and check it out. But you were showing some of it online. I believe it was the Red Dragon, if I remember correctly. It was gorgeously done. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the game loop for this seems like it's going to be building your characters to be able to be more efficient and stuff like that. Is there any other game loops that you've been putting into the game?
So there's also skills a little bit. So it's not just about efficiency. It's also about trying out new things.
Okay.
Right? So each character, you know, like I mentioned before, they as they level up, they'll get new skills. And those skills can be pretty powerful. Mm-hmm. So... But there's a lot of ways you can go about the game, because you don't have to necessarily go with, oh, I'm going to keep leveling up the same few guys. You might, and it lets you try out a few things at a time. You might go, I'm going to level up like this one fighter and this one cleric, and we're going to see how this goes. And then you kind of learn the specifics of that class and that one way of playing it. but you might also have a run where you just get a lot of kobolds, for instance. Yeah. And there's race perks too. So like the race perk for kobold is that they're really cheap. Yeah. They don't get any other buffs, but they're really cheap. So you might have one run where you're like, screw it, I'm just going to take like 15 guys because I can afford it.
Right. An army of minions.
And just overwhelm them. Yeah, like none of them are super strong, but I have a lot. Yeah. You know, so it's that kind of thing of... It's not just necessarily, oh, I need to plan and optimize. There's room for creativity and messing around.
How do you balance that? Because there's so many games that struggle with that.
Yeah. So I think the way that we balance it is mostly around the encounters themselves are built with... It's funny because it's like the roguelike element, it has a bit of randomization in it in itself, where the different characters that are generated in each mission you play... Mm-hmm. have their own like randomized stats, and so the difficulty is going to vary a little bit from time to time, but I think the main difficulty comes from like the number of enemies that are present rather than their specific stats. There's also like a generic term for like there's the normal guys that are like your typical peasants and villagers that fight, and then there are the heroes, and the heroes have their own class system that is like their own set of skills that are they kind of mirror your own abilities, essentially. And so those are like the powerhouses that kind of show up. And so it's less about like balancing about like, oh my gosh, what are the players going to do?
Yeah.
And it's more about balancing about what do we do that's like an overall fair difficulty that, you know, it's not necessarily something that's going to like completely obliterate you on the first couple tries unless it's like later in the game. Mm-hmm. You know, like the late levels are going to be really tough. Yeah. But the early levels are approachable, is the idea. So that way, you never get in a place where you're like, man, I tried this strategy, and I died on the first level, and that sucks. I guess I can't use that strategy. And, like, there will be some of that in, like, oh, I died in, like, the third level, dang. But it's not like, I can't try this in the first place. You know, it's like, there's... So that's kind of where the balancing, I think, comes in. Most of that design work, though, for how the levels are structured... And the planning around it is from Chris Jensen. He's our lead designer. There is also one other thing that I forgot about until now that I forgot to mention. There's secondary objectives. And this is kind of a catch for if you have like a weaker strategy or a weaker team and you're falling behind. It's cool because it has like, it's a risk. Well, it's a reward risk. Most things are risk reward. This is the reverse. Yeah. It makes the mission easier. Because instead of having to beat everyone on the field, you can kind of rush down this objective. Like, the first level is you're trying to loot this carriage. Mm-hmm. So instead of beating everyone and then taking the carriage like you're asked to do, you can just blow up the carriage.
Yeah.
And the carriage is, like, a fully interactable object in the game is what we're going to do. So you can just attack it directly. And if it runs out of health, it's, like, weak to fire damage, and it runs out of health, you just win the fight. But the downside is... Red, the dragon, gets mad at you because he says, you weren't supposed to destroy it, you're supposed to loot it. And he says, on your next mission, you get less gold to work with. In the short term, you get payoff, but in the long term, it makes it a little harder. So it's kind of like, it's this, it's like a balancing of difficulty where if you have like a rough session, like in one or two sessions, you can kind of like finagle it so you still make your way through and you're kind of squeaking by. So it makes things more tough, but it's not like you instantly lose a run.
Right.
Even though it kind of snowballs a bit over time. It's not like the effects stack, but it's just you having the next mission harder means you're more inclined to go for the secondary again.
Yeah.
And the final mission, the final boss, doesn't have a secondary. Okay. So it's kind of like you can usually consistently make it to the boss if you're really good. And it's just about... It kind of adds a challenge in a way, but it also makes it... balance so that you'll at least get far in each run, which is nice because you at least feel like, man, I accomplished a lot of stuff. I did good things.
Of course.
Even if it ended up being more stacked in that final fight because of the decisions you made. And you recognize, yeah, this is because the decisions I made as a player ended up putting me in this spot because I chose to do the secondary. I could have taken the risk to do the main fights, but I didn't, you know?
Now, are there any sort of benefits? Are you maybe snowballing some abilities, stuff like that, if you take different routes? You're saying that, you know, you're going to get hampered if you blow up the chest. Mm-hmm. What if you do something else that might benefit you? Is that a possibility?
So I think, like, mainly it's, like, the other route is just trying to go for everyone.
Okay.
But I would say, like, the best way to do that would be, like, thinking about the layout of the level. Mm-hmm. I know one of the later ones we have planned is a gold vault. It's like you raid, like, a bank, essentially. And there's this cool strategy element to it. And this isn't, like, exactly secondary, but it kind of adds to this level of planning that the vault has, like, a main vault door. And I think you spawn inside of the treasure room. And half the enemies spawn in with you, and half the enemies are outside, if I recall. Right. So they're kind of split up. Mm-hmm. And so you can do this strategy of... usually it's like you can fight them from one side and then try and get to them the other. But it's kind of hard to get to them because you have to go through the door. Mm-hmm. But there is going to be like a crack in the wall that small characters can get through. So you could do like an alternate challenge of, I'm going to only use smaller characters, but you get the advantage of, now I can move freely through these walls. So I get the time advantage of being able to get from one side to the other quickly. I can escape if they need. And meanwhile, the enemies are trying to break the vault door down because they can't get through where I can. Which, time matters, because there is an element of, after like 10, 12 rounds or so of, like, if you've been fighting for like a while and the fight's just dragging on, eventually they might start sending reinforcements in some of the levels. So speed is a bit of a factor too, so stuff like that would like help you out, you know.
The layers in this game are blowing me away. I mean, honestly, it seems so big and in depth. How hard is it to write all those options and everything like that?
I think it's not super difficult, because the complexity doesn't come, and this is the biggest thing, the complexity doesn't come in this design that Chris has made from making everything complicated, right? Mm-hmm. It's not like we went, oh, and we're going to have like this oddly specific weird quirk that only happens when this class of this character of this thing does this item in that position. Like, no, it's usually more general stuff of like, you can use secondary objective. And what creates the complexity isn't so much any one individual thing. It's when multiple simple things you've made layer on top of each other.
Yeah.
You know, it's when small character going through this hole meets... we put enemies on one side and the other, and with a destructible door. Meets, you can also play for the secondary objective if you don't want to fight them, you know?
Yeah.
Meets, did I plan for training my guys in advance by leveling them up, or did I focus on, like, getting a bunch of gear and getting, like, a couple really stacked guys, you know? Stuff like that.
That's amazing. That is such a fascinating idea. And again, like I was saying, such a layered game. Guys, I'm going to make sure all the links in the description so you guys can go through and start checking them out. Watch the video so you can see the beautiful pixel art. It's gorgeous. But thank you so much for hanging out with me today. I really appreciate that.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Of course, of course. Again, guys, Cobalt Tactics, check it out. Is it on Steam yet?
Not yet.
Not yet. It'll be on Steam soon. I will make sure to post it on social media when it is.
Hi, welcome back, everybody, to the Capital Creative Showcase. From Geek Freaks, this is Tyler, and I'm here with
Jamel.
We talked last time at this event,
yes,
and I kind of want to just chat again about your game and then talk about the progression. So give us the name of the game again.
So my game's name is Vassal. It is a Metroidvania action platformer. It's a fun time. A little hard. But I mean,
a little to say the least, man. A little. I was doing a boss battle, and man, you know how to make it hard, but it's good though. I think it's a good challenge. I think it's just, you know, it's tweaking here and there more than anything else. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think the cool part of your game though is the style. It's just so in your face. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
It pops in color and like. There's also this dark element to it. It's a good mixture of dark and light color.
Right.
Which is cool.
Which is what I definitely was going for. I do want the colorful, but I mean, even I feel like everything doesn't have to be dark and gritty to also be serious at the same time. I like, you know, pretty things can be dangerous also. You know?
And the progress from the game, I mean, the last time was just very baseline. You just had kind of a starter level, you had a couple mechanics, you know, here and there. But you've really fleshed out your game a lot more. So kind of bring us to, like, where you were at to now where you are.
Okay, so... you know, when I first started, I was more focused on combat. I wanted, like... I for sure want it like a game like Devil May Cry or something like that, where you know, you can do combos, and I'm a big fighting game person too, so you know, that's very important to me. But now I've really had time to look at the direction of the style and like what I want traversal to look like too. So, you know, as you can see, the game is very focused in like a hip hop style. Yeah. There's graffiti, like the HUD has graffiti on it. Like your life bar looks like graffiti. Everything's like very hip hop focused. So I was like, you know, how do people get around in urban areas? And I was like, parkour, duh. Yeah. So I want there to be a nice flow when you're running. Like my whole goal,
your movement smooth.
So my whole goal is like, if I could think about somebody playing this game, they have their headphones on, they have this nice like these nice like kind of what do I want, lo-fi beats going, and they're running and just like, you know, jumping off of things and just smoothly platforming and sailing through the levels and stuff. That's really what I want.
Yeah, it's really cool to see kind of like the action behind the game, your how you react to things and your movement options, because you have a lot of movement options.
Yes.
There's an intended way to get into certain places, but your mechanics allow you to do so much more beyond just, you know, jumping, dashing, and all that. You've now added like a ledge dash, where you can kind of hit the ledge and shoot yourself forward, which gives you way more options to move with, which is super cool. And the thing that I like too is that you fleshed out the combat in such a way where it doesn't feel just like 1, 2, 3 every time. It's like you can hit with a lot of different angles. You have a lot of different hitting options that pop up or hit downward. You know what I mean? It gives more to the game than just the element of hitting an enemy.
Yes.
And pop an enemy up and move things around as well.
Right. And I definitely want, I don't want it to be a, you know, I love beat 'em ups, but I do want you to have to think about your options when
like
you do
fight.
Like a beat
'em up with style.
Yes,
you know
exactly.
I mean? Yeah.
I don't want you to just be able to mash. Like sometimes you gotta wait a little bit.
Does
defend.
The character have a name officially, or is that
Ekon? Is Ekon. His name?
Okay, gotcha. And I remember we talked about like Static Shock was the big inspiration behind it, and the color scheme is there too. Mm-hmm. It's super cool to like think about that and like see how the character, you know, the personality in the character shows even without dialogue.
Right.
You don't have any dialogue, not the story fleshed out for it quite yet, but even in the way the character portrays himself in the movement, like, you can tell what kind of character he is.
Yeah, you know? And if you ever do get the chance to see him, he literally, I took inspiration from, like you said, Static Shock, Miles Morales, like just that young black kid that is confident, but he doesn't know what he's doing for real.
And it's cool to see that, like, you now have the boss battle.
Yes.
And the boss is hard. It's no joke. Like, I was playing a couple of times, and I found some unintended things as well. But it was cool to play the boss battle, and then, you know, I was using one of the mechanics, and then as I used it, I found a bug where I got hit and the mechanic didn't finish its animation, so it still showed that it was moving, but it wasn't, and I lost that, you know, dashing mechanic. So
pretty much.
It was interesting to now have to figure out how to play without using that mechanic.
You know, the more you talk about that, the more I'm kind of maybe thinking of making that a feature where it's like, you can be debilitated and not use certain moves. Mm-hmm. That would be actually kind of
sick. It
would be
cool if the boss had that. Like, the boss had the ability to, like,
take away some of your stuff.
It takes something away, and it, like, it's an indicator that shows you, oh, no dash, or, you know, like, no jump.
Right.
You know, so you have to block.
Yes.
So, but it'd be interesting to see. But it's super cool to, like, see how far your game's come to. You know, from the point that you were at the first time we were here from the second point, it's, like, incredible stuff. It's super cool to see it fleshed out like that. So
thank you.
And the progress in the game is slow but sure, which is great. Mm-hmm. Like, I think in the developer aspect, you want to do so much with the game, and it can be daunting, it can be overwhelming, but at the same time, it's like, you know, take a bite, you know what I mean? And if you finish a little bit, hey, you got something done. So it's cool that you've gotten so much more into it, because now you have different levels fleshed out and a lot of different things working. So Where can people find you in regards to, like, you know, making sure the game's looking good and they can follow how the game's going and that kind of stuff?
Okay, so I have an Instagram for myself and the game. My Instagram is Lord Hero Man, and then the game is, the game's Instagram is Vassal by Lord Hero Man. It also has an itch.io under the name 1HP Productions, which is me because I'm the only one working on it. and then we also have a website that is launching soon, and that will be Vassal the Hub. And that's where you can find all the information and also connect to all of our different, you know, media.
Can I say that I have, like, the unofficial speedrun record for the first demo? Can that be a thing or no?
Yeah, you can say it for now.
Okay, good.
For now.
Hey, I have a speedrun world record now. So
there we go.
Yep. I can put that under my caption in the
yeah, I just need a picture of you smiling. Yep.
We're good, man. We're good. No, it's so cool to have you back, and I'm excited to see where you go from here, man. So,
it's good to be
but
back.
But things have been looking awesome. The game looks like a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
And as it continues to develop, I mean, it's going to become something really cool. So keep it up, man. It's super fun.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thank you for having me, too.
All right, guys. We'll see you again next time.
Hey, y'all. Editor Frank here. Just letting you know, this is part one of two. Part two is going to be coming out later this week. We're going to be meeting a few more of the developers, making our picks for the game of the year, and interviewing those who actually won. Thanks for hanging out with us, and I'll see you next time.